Local news can come at you fast. Want the latest on what's happening in your backyard? Download the free Odyssey app. Follow your local news station, and you'll get alerts on the top stories making headlines in your city. You can stay in the know, no matter what you're up to, and be among the first to find out when news breaks. Plus, keep tabs on weather and traffic, so you're never caught off guard. To get started, download the Odyssey app. That's A-U-D-A-C-Y. And follow your local news station.
The Rich Zeoli Show podcast is sponsored by Mike Venaria Jr. with Osperity Private Wealth.
Hi, I'm Mike Venaria Jr., Wealth Management Specialist. Make your retirement dreams a reality by creating your retirement plan today. Call me at 856-252-0107.
What a day! What a day! Unbelievable. If you're just joining us, it has been a jam-packed, action-packed afternoon. Like afternoons are going to be for the next 4 years, and we're making afternoon drive radio great again. Oh, we already have been doing that, thanks to you. Welcome back to the show. Glad you're here. 855-839-1210. Our fourth and final hour on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT. It is great to have you here. It's really great to have you here. I am very happy with what happened today, what transpired. And I'll tell you a couple things. Number one, first and foremost, Trump signing executive order to declassify the files around the Kennedy assassinations, Martin Luther King's assassination. Great stuff. Telling off the Bond villains at the WEF, and the fact that Pete Hegseth is on the path to a confirmation vote in the Senate, despite opposition from those Republican hags. I think that is great, great stuff. Great stuff. It's been a jam-packed afternoon. So I'm thrilled. Really, really am. And I want to play a couple of audio for you, a couple of clips of things. But I have this story from the New York Post. Unemployed Kamala Harris. Her neighbors are annoyed by her return to L.A. as the city burns. I'm embarrassed that she lives here. I don't care that she's back, except that they block off the road whenever she comes to town. Said one resident, they're annoyed by the fact that she's got all this traffic around her house now, and they know she's going to be there for a while because she has no job and she has nothing to do. That's fantastic. I love that. They're all like, oh, my God, she's back. Dear God, no. That's probably why she won California. They didn't want her moving back. It's basically what it comes down to. She's probably going to run for governor of California, right, Matt? That's the big rumor, I think. So
yeah, I'm sure that's your next move. By the way, did you see that story in Mediaite about Doug Emhoff being Mr. Tough Guy?
Yeah, he's not Mr. Tough Guy. He's the biggest freaking beta out there, Doug Emhoff.
Well, there was that big thing about how Bruce Fisher, the husband of Senator Debbie Fisher, didn't shake Kamala Harris's hand after Fisher had been sworn in. But it turns out like he just wasn't able to shake Kamala Harris's hand because he walks with a cane, so he had a cane in one hand and he was carrying a Bible that his wife was sworn in on in the other hand. So I guess the Harris supporters thought it was a big slight. Anyway, Bruce Fisher tries to be a nice guy and goes up to Emhoff and Harris to shake their hands at the inauguration, and Emhoff tells him no.
What a jerk.
Yeah, that's horrible.
What a petty little man. The guy had a cane and a Bible, and he couldn't shake his hand, so Emhoff's like, I'm not shaking your hand.
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
At least he didn't beat him like he was dating him, so there's that, you know?
Didn't knock him up either like a...
Like he was the nanny, right?
Yeah.
A slime ball he is, that guy. We still have some great audio from Trump at Davos today, too. I wanted to get to. I mean, it was a good speech today. Where is it now? I wanted to pull up. I just got this one clip I love. And the fact that the JFK files are now declassified and it's going to happen within 45 days is really, really great stuff. But Matt, what's the clip of that company that says they're probably moving back to the United States of America now because of the fact that tariffs are coming? You have that clip in front of you because I can't find my show sheet all of a sudden.
Yeah, it's cut seven. Stellantis is the company.
Stellantis. They're probably moving back to America because of Trump's tariffs. You see, this is the negotiation thing. This is what I'm talking about. Take a listen.
Stellantis Investments returns 1,500 jobs to their Illinois plant. They're going to produce their new midsize pickup in Illinois, and they're going to build their next-gen Dodge Durango at their Detroit complex.
Yeah, I'd be interested to know what the next-gen Dodge Durango looks like. Is that electrified? Is it a hybrid? Hopefully the latter for
the Trump administration
investors in Stellantis.
On EVs.
No, and consumers really not that hot on EVs either.
Very true.
It's interesting to see Olaf Scholz in Germany wants to really push ahead, obviously, because they've invested Volkswagen, Daimler, and BMW so much in electrification. But, yeah, this is interesting. You know, they're also pulling their production down from Canada into the U.S., Illinois, Ohio, and Michigan.
By the way, just some breaking news also this afternoon. Dave McCormick and Senator Dave McCormick and Senator John Fetterman have both sent a letter to Marco Rubio along with the congressional delegation in the House asking the new Secretary of State to work on getting Mark Vogel back. Mark is a Pennsylvania man who has been held by Russia for a long time right now, and this is something that they are hoping will happen, and they sent this letter today, and I just wanted to share it with you because, man, what a busy freaking day it's been today. If I can find it now, let's see here. Trying to keep up with all the breaking news on this show is never, ever easy. Pennsylvania delegation urges Rubio to get Mark Vogel home. Senators McCormick and Fetterman, and a bicameral letter today asking him to get him back. They said, as I told Mark's mom when we spoke in August, we want to do everything we can to get him home. And it's time to stand with Pennsylvania and Mark's family to get him home. The Russian government has used Mark as a political pawn for far too long, and we look forward to working with President Trump and Secretary Rubio to finally bring Mark home. He's a good man who made mistakes, and now he's facing an inhumane sentence in a notoriously brutal Russian prison. I fought relentlessly to bring Mark home, and I'm not stopping until we get this done, said Senator Fetterman. This letter is proof that Pennsylvanians, regardless of party, are united in bringing Mark home. I'm proud to stand with my new colleague, Senator McCormick, in calling on Secretary Rubio to take bold, decisive action to make that happen. In August of 2021, Mark was detained by Russian authorities at the airport for carrying about half an ounce of medical marijuana in his luggage, which he was prescribed in the United States to treat chronic back pain. Mark and his wife, Jane, were returning to Moscow to teach the Anglo-American school in Moscow. They had both worked there since 2012. In June of 2022, the Russian court system sentenced him to 14 years behind bars. More than three harrowing years later, Mark remains expelled to a high-security penal colony, separated from his family without a clear path home. Moscow has rejected the United States Department of State's repeated requests for Mark's release on humanitarian grounds, and his health is deteriorating badly. Of course, they did get that basketball player home because Biden was all about the publicity around that, and she's a lesbian and a black lesbian, so, you know, there's like a push to the DEI aspect of this, and they just didn't care about Mark Vogel. And I said at the time, If you're gonna release this guy who was known as this big weapons seller, the merchant of death, then get all of them back. Get all the Americans who were being held in Russia back. That was a big bargaining chip that we let go, and that infuriated me at the time that happened. So good for these senators for signing that letter and for trying to make this happen. I think that's good. James Smith says, Rich, I'm an Uber Lyft driver, and I just had a passenger ask me to change the station during your last segment about the border as soon as you played the clip of Trump speaking. LOLOL, it's going to be a long 4 years for these unhinged libs. Hashtag MAGA. Well, James Smith, thank you for sharing that, my man, on X. And I wish you safe driving and lots of luck. If I could pick you as my Uber driver sometime, I certainly would. And I'll follow you on X, James, so that I appreciate you playing 1210 WPHG in your Uber. I think that's awesome. That's great. I'd tell you a funny story once. It was election day back in 2016, and I got picked up in an Uber to go to the station because we were going to be having our election party that night, and I didn't want to drive. And guy says to me, he goes, did you vote? I said, no, I didn't vote. I'm not really political. I'm not politically active. And he's like, oh, I can't believe you'd waste your vote, blah, blah, blah. And I just didn't want to get into it, you know? And so I said, okay. And I said, well, who'd you vote for? He goes, well, I voted for Donald Trump. The man's going to save America. And I really hope he wins today. I said, all right, here's the deal. I did vote. And then he recognized my voice and we were good. But, you know, you just never know, right? You just never know. Matt, do you remember that guy at the Republican National Convention who picked us up and was trying to just trash Trump? And we both said we're not political people and we're journalists. We don't talk politics. Do you remember that?
Yeah, we had worked, I think, about 12 hours that day. Nobody wanted to engage with this guy politically.
No, he was dying to. He's like, you're not Trumpers, are you? And I was like, no, man, we're journalists. We're nonpartisan. He's like, yeah, but what do you think of Trump? I'm like, I don't think anything. I don't think. I just don't think. He was dying to get into it with us. And after a 12-hour day walking 2 miles in each direction to get into the arena, the last thing I'm doing is getting into a political discussion with you, man. It's the last thing I'm doing. You know, and I'm sure that Uber driver who just tweeted at me, I'm sure he was more just fine. You know, he changed the station. James, happy to, you know, help his customer, doesn't want to be a jerk. It would have been the opposite with this guy. If we had said, oh, no, we support Trump, it would have been 40 minutes of him lecturing us about how horrible Trump is. I think he probably would have thrown us out of his Uber, like in the middle of some road in Wisconsin on the side of the road. Am I right?
It may have been better than our hotel, actually.
Well, that's true. It would have been a big upgrade, even if we slept on the streets that night. Fair point.
Roaches. Yeah.
Yeah, that place was still, I still have bed bugs. I can't get rid of them. That's how bad that, disgusting. Here's Trump today in Davos talking about a lot of different things and saying that America is a free nation once again. No censorship. And this is great because he's telling these Bond villains who, remember, they all want speech codes and they all want this international order to be able to crack down on so-called disinformation. And he's making it clear to the Bond villains, we're not playing that game in America. Cut number two.
In addition, I'm pleased to report that America is also a free nation once again. On day one, I signed an executive order to stop all government censorship. No longer will our government label the speech of our own citizens as misinformation or disinformation, which are the favorite words of censors and those who wish to stop the free exchange of ideas and, frankly, progress. We have saved free speech in America, and we've saved it strongly.
Good for him. And he also told the Bond villains at the WEF, hey, listen, here's the deal. The United States of America is committed to ending the climate green new scam nonsense. Again, saying it right to their face, and this is not the stuff they want to hear. These people hate hearing this, and I love the fact that he said it to these people. Terminated the ridiculously, incredibly wasteful cut number three.
I terminated the ridiculous and incredibly wasteful Green New Deal. I call it the Green New Scam. Withdrew from the one-sided Paris Climate Accord and ended the insane and costly electric vehicle mandate. We're going to let people buy the car they want to buy.
Good. Excellent. And by the way, when it comes to NATO, we're tired of being the sugar daddy for the world. I'm sick and tired of it. And this is why I'm glad Trump said what he said today regarding NATO. Cut four.
Finally, as we restore common sense in America, we're moving quickly to bring back strength and peace and stability abroad. I'm also going to ask all NATO nations to increase defense spending to 5% of GDP, which is what it should have been years ago.
Exactly. Damn right. Why are we always funding the world's police department here? It's enough is enough. And he shamed the Bank of America CEO Brian Moynihan right to his face today. Love it. Cut number eight.
Where you're going to bring it down to 15%, which is really something. And by the way, speaking of you, and you've done a fantastic job, but I hope you start opening your bank to conservatives, because many conservatives complain that the banks are not allowing them to do business within the bank. And that included a place called Bank of America. They don't take conservative business. And I don't know if the regulators mandated that because of Biden or what, but you and Jamie and everybody, I hope you're going to open your banks to conservatives, because what you're doing is wrong.
Good. Excellent. Well done. Well said.
Mr. President, I'll say that.
He was like, blah, 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 blah. Oh, a cat. And And this congressman, Tim Burchett, this might be my favorite clip of the day today to Jim Acosta, who, of course, was reporting from journalist internment camp. On day one of Trump's inauguration, he was rounded up and put back into Trump's journalist internment camp on the south lawn of the White House, where he's only allowed one piece of white bread a day because he's about as fascinating and interesting as white bread. But here's what Congressman Tim Burchett told Jim Acosta, Cut 13.
Is covered on CNN. What you're saying, this is not Fox, Congressman. You can't just spin a tale and pull the wool over people's eyes.
Yeah.
This is CNN. This is the news. We are asking you to come on and tell the truth.
And that's why more people are watching the Cartoon Network SpongeBob reruns right now, Jim.
SpongeBob reruns. Trump says Mike Pompeo asked him not to release the full JFK assassination documents. I'm glad Pompeo lost his national security clearance. I don't understand why these guys get national security clearance for life. I don't understand this. Cut 21.
Will you investigate these assassination attempts? And you stated that you will release the files, all of the files, as it relates to the JFK assassination. And by the way, this is his desk.
Yeah, that's right.
This is where John Kennedy, little
that's
John.
It's a movable door.
Yeah.
It's a little door there. That's where John was.
John, yeah. And RFK, and also Martin Luther King Jr., and that you will be transparent. This was going to happen in the first
time. So many people have asked me to do that. And I did it with Kennedy to an extent. Right. But I was asked by some of our government officials not to. And, you know, you have to respect them. I was actually asked by Mike Pompeo, his Secretary of State, not to. And I felt he knew something that maybe, you know, when he asks you not to, you sort of say why. And he felt that it was just not a good time to release him. And you might ask him why. Maybe he'll deny that even. But he did. He asked me. And some others also, though. They didn't want the Kennedy stuff released.
And that is the big story of the hour, brought to you by our buddy Dr. Mike Veneria, with two locations to serve you in Cinnamon and in Woodbury. Get your smile today with Dr. Mike Veneria, VeneriaDental.com. You know how Trump revoked the national security clearance of all those 51 deep state hacks who signed the Hunter Biden letter, saying that the Hunter Biden letter was the laptop was most likely Russian disinformation? Well, John Brennan, who should be in prison, this guy, this slime bag, who broke into a bipartisan skiff investigating enhanced interrogation / torture and had his CIA goons raid Congress's computers, this guy should be in jail. But he hates Trump, so he's on MSNBC all the time. He was the architect of torture, and yet the left loves him now because he hates Trump. Well, listen to him spin this about that letter. That where they said that they believe this is all the earmarks of Russian disinformation. Listen to this lying hack try to spin that. Take a listen.
Oh, sorry, that's the cut that was dead.
Oh, it was dead. Okay, no problem. Yeah, we'll get that for another time. No problem.
Yeah.
And here's Senator Rand Paul saying what Anthony Fauci, Dr. Fauci, Asanto Fauci, the nation's leading infectious disease doctor, you always have to say that by law. Can he be prosecuted? No. Should he be prosecuted? No, because he was pardoned, and I want to be consistent. However, Congress should get all of the details of everything this scoundrel did. And if he lies under oath to Congress, then charge him with perjury. Here's what Rand Paul says about Dr. Fauci and how history will judge him. Take a listen.
Anthony Fauci.
You're fooling with Mother Nature here. You're allowing super viruses to be created with a 15% mortality. It's very dangerous. I think it was a huge mistake to share this with China. And it's a huge mistake to allow this to continue in the United States.
But again, we have not funded gain-of-function research on this virus in the Wuhan Institute of Virology.
You're parsing words. You have said that Fauci should go to prison over his dishonesty regarding the COVID-19 virus and the gain-of-function research. But, Senator, he is now protected by a preemptive presidential pardon.
History is going to judge him harshly. By accepting that pardon through Supreme Court precedents, he's actually accepting his guilt. So he's accepting culpability. He made the decision to bypass and to avoid the safety committee to fund this without adequate review of its safety. He made a terrible decision. But you have to realize it wasn't a one-off. For over a decade, Anthony Fauci had said that the risks of a pandemic occurring were worth the benefit of the knowledge.
And now President Trump will be putting a pause on gain-of-function research. Good. Listen, Dr. Mike Veneria is my friend and my dentist, the master of implant dentistry, and he's going to give you the smile that you need, you deserve. Baby, come on. Mama Zioli found him for my family, and we all go to him. I go to him, Bridget goes to him, Patrick, Claire, and Reagan. And his specialty is complicated dental work, including implant dentistry. When it comes to dental implants, this is real, this is serious stuff here. You got to go to the best. You don't want to go to the closest dentist. You know, there may be some guy in a strip mall 5 minutes from your house, but no, you want the master. For 10 years in a row, 10 consecutive years, Dr. Mike has been regarded among his peers as the master of dental implants. So what are you waiting for? Reach out to Dr. Mike today by going to VenariaDental.com. V-A-N-A-R-I-A, VenariaDental.com. Woodbury and Cinnaminson right over the bridge. And yes, it's worth crossing the river for his level of dental expertise. Plus, you'll love the guy. He's got great music playing, great people that work for him. Everybody's dedicated to your care. If you've been putting off going to see a dentist, or if you've had an estimate for complicated dental work, get a second opinion with my man, my buddy, my friend, and the master of dental implants, Dr. Mike Veneria, VeneriaDental.com.
The Rich Zioli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHD.
So, yeah, Murkowski came out and said she was going to oppose Pete Hegseth. I'm not surprised. Are you surprised? Who would be surprised by that? The question, of course, was McConnell, and it was Susan Collins, and it was this jerk from Utah. So that was the question. But if, as long as there was not going to be another Republican rebelling, then J.D. Vance can step in, and he could vote to tie, break a tie if necessary. And as long as there wasn't going to be a filibuster, and now they have cleared the filibuster hurdle, so Hegseth will get in there. That's some good good news. All right. That's some good news. And that makes me happy. So, Tulsi Gabbard, unfortunately, though, is facing bipartisan condemnation, and so is Robert F. Kennedy Jr. But I still believe that they're going to get through. I really do. You know, John Ratcliffe was confirmed a few moments earlier this afternoon. He was confirmed as the director of the CIA. And they asked Senator Rand Paul about it. And Rand Paul was like, look, President Trump won. He won by a big majority, and he has the right to put his people in there who he wants to put in. Rubio was basically unanimous, and Ratcliffe had it was very, very much across bipartisan lines that he was confirmed as CIA director. I worry about Tulsi. I worry about Robert F. Kennedy Jr., and I was worried about Pete Hegseth, but now, apparently, according to the news, we don't have to worry about him. He should get confirmed, of course. Until it's a done deal, it's not a done deal. So we'll pay attention to that and obviously monitor it as it goes on until the vote, which could be tomorrow. But they're playing these procedural games. And the procedural games they're playing is they're doing these 30-hour debates, which is nonsense. Just entitled, just trying to drag this process out. These 30-hour debates, and then they have to go to the next person and wait 30 hours, and then the next person. And it's just more games that they're playing. It's not going to accomplish anything. But they love playing games, because then it gives them the opportunity to go to the microphone and grandstand. And Chuck Schumer loves a good grandstand. Oh, you know who else loves a good grandstand? Is Larry Krasner. So, you know, I got a story the other day somebody sent me that Larry Krasner was going to start charging the individuals who were either had their sentences pardoned or commuted by President Trump in regards to January the 6th. And I never was able to find an actual news story about it. But it turns out that Larry Krasner is considering bringing state charges against certain individuals who were either pardoned or commuted who live in Pennsylvania. And what I can't understand for the life of me is where his jurisdiction is here, because last time I checked, the United States Capitol building was in Washington, D.C. Larry Krasner is not the prosecutor of Washington, D.C. He's the prosecutor of Philadelphia, which is not in Washington, D.C. I mean, at one time, it was the nation's capital, but it's not now. So I don't think there's a provision that says if it was ever the nation's capital, then you've got jurisdiction over whatever the new capital is. You know what I mean? So, like, well, it was Philadelphia, so now it's D.C., but you still have jurisdiction over D.C. because you were one, because it was one time Philadelphia and you're Philadelphia's district attorney. I don't think that provision works. So, I don't think that's going to go anywhere. Also, there's a double jeopardy aspect of this, too. And I understand that there's differences between federal crimes and state crimes. But clearly, there's nothing state-related about January the 6th. And I personally have a real problem when either the feds go after people who were found not guilty on state charges, or the states do it to people that were found not guilty on federal charges or were commuted or pardoned. I find it to be grotesque. It violates the spirit of double jeopardy, whether or not it really violates double jeopardy. And it's complicated because it's not exactly trying the person on the same crime necessarily, because it's trying them of a like crime. So it's like, well, that crime is also just like our crime, but it's not the same crime because it's like our crime. And so therefore, we can charge you in state court, even though you were found not guilty in federal court, or vice versa. It's grotesque. It is absolutely flies in the face of the double jeopardy provision in the Constitution. And I'm sorry, but anybody who argues otherwise is a tough on crime lunatic who's willing to burn the Constitution just to get the bad guy. And we've learned our lesson on that, have we not? You don't burn the Constitution to get the bad guy. The bad guy has to go free? Fine. The Constitution has to endure. And hopefully at one point the Supreme Court will settle that question once and for all, because, yeah, you know, they change a couple words here and there, and it's essentially the same law. But they go, well, we got you. We got you on the state level. We got you on the federal level, because the jury wouldn't find you. Now, that's different from a civil trial. And obviously, if you're found not guilty in a crime, but say, well, I mean, the classic example is O.J., and then they sue him in civil court, and then they find him guilty in civil court, and he has to pay money, and, you know, there's no jail time associated with it. So the double jeopardy provision doesn't apply in civil court, and also there's a different burden of proof, and I don't need to get into all that. I'm not a lawyer, but Larry Krasner has no jurisdiction in this. I mean, nothing that happened on January the 6th, whether you find January 6th to be the worst day in American history or you find it to be a bunch of people walking through and taking selfies, is irrelevant to Larry Krasner's jurisdiction over this. There's nothing whatsoever about January 6th that anyone can argue violates a state law. It didn't even happen in a state. It happened in the District of Columbia. So there's nothing in there where Larry Krasner can claim a jurisdictional stake in this. He doesn't have to like it, but it doesn't give him the authority then to charge anybody, because he's really offended by Trump's pardons. Well, so what? Two tough nookies. Well, I don't know what to tell you. I don't like all of Biden's pardons. I don't like lots of pardons. That doesn't change the fact that it's a pardon. The Constitution enables the president to grant pardons and clemency. And you don't have the authority to charge somebody with a crime that happened nowhere even near your freaking jurisdiction. That doesn't even violate another state crime because it didn't happen in a state. You idiot. But again, Krasner's just trying to make publicity for himself. He knows that that's not going anywhere. But it's just, it's grotesque is what it is. Like, why don't you focus on criminals actually in your jurisdiction? Like, focus on criminals in the city of Philadelphia. If you want to do something, do that. There's plenty of them to choose from. All right? You got lots of them to choose from. I know the whole, it doesn't get you all the attention. And you don't like, basically, those criminals in your mind are victims of society. Whereas the people on January the 6th are the true criminals. And you got to find a loophole that you can charge them in state court. For what? What happened that day that is any way a violation of Pennsylvania law or violates anything that would require the Philadelphia prosecutor to get involved? Nothing. So silly. Now, some of the January 6th protesters and rioters and other people who were pardoned, because Trump just pardoned everybody, well, they have been arrested on other charges relating to guns and things like that. And it goes back to the old adage. If the government wants to get you, the government's going to find a way to get you. And for some of these people, they had other offenses, and then they went after them for having firearms, and a lot of that's tricky. And, you know, maybe we'll get into the individual cases of that as time goes on. We're still kind of learning a lot about this, but Julie Kelly's all over it. And again, I find it to be violating the spirit of the president's pardon and clemency. Whether you agree with it or not, doesn't give the right of federal law enforcement to say, well, we don't like it, so therefore we're gonna still find a way to lock this guy up on something else. You know what I mean? And that's exactly what this is. It's I don't have to like something in order for it to be constitutional. Like, for example, You heard in the CBS News report about birthright citizenship, and this federal judge, has declared that Trump's executive order is unconstitutional, blatantly unconstitutional. So Trump signed an executive order ending what is known as birthright citizenship for somebody who's born on U.S. soil. And this judge said it's blatantly unconstitutional. What makes it blatantly unconstitutional? His opinion? Because let's understand something. When the 14th Amendment was ratified, nobody at the time thought it applied to people who did not have a legal claim to the United States of America. And the best evidence of that is twofold. One is just the fact of the day, which is that back then, ambassadors, diplomats, all these fancy people couldn't take a flight. They had to take a boat. And they would be in the United States of America for months or years. And many of them would have children here. Many of them would literally raise their families here on diplomatic missions because it was just too much to go back and forth. And quite frankly, you know, you get seasick. And they didn't invent Dramamine for like another 100 years or something. So I don't blame a lot of these people. They would just basically live in the United States. The ambassador to France would live here. And every now and then he'd, you know, send letters back to the parliament, go back like once a year and have Christmas there or whatever and come back. I mean, it's just the way it was. And they had mistresses and lovers and kids with those mistresses. But no one ever believed, with the exception of the mistresses, that the children of ambassadors and diplomats would become American citizens if they were born in the United States during that diplomatic mission. When it ended, they left. The kids didn't stay behind and say, well, now I'm an American citizen because I was born here. No, because your parents did not have a legal claim to the United States of America. They were not legal. They were not citizens. They were here on diplomatic business. Therefore, you are not a citizen because they don't have the legal basis for you to become a citizen. And that has always been understood. 14th Amendment was passed and ratified so that freed slaves would be considered United States citizens. Okay? And at the time, all the people that were advocating for the passage of the 14th Amendment were specifically making the point back then, this did not apply to foreigners. Because there were people that came into this country to work, and it did not apply to foreigners. And they would say that very often because back then citizenship actually meant something. So the idea would be, no, listen, this is, we got to tie up this loophole here so that it's very clear that the slaves, now freed slaves, were American citizens and not property. Remember, we had the Dred Scott decision. I love when the left whines about precedent, Supreme Court precedent. Like in how if something's precedent, it can never be overturned. How's this one for precedent? Supreme Court at one point said that people can be property. In the case of Dred Scott, a slave who escaped, freed, and then, well, he was still property in the eyes of the Supreme Court, a racist Supreme Court decision, obviously, blatantly unconstitutional. And the 14th Amendment, among other things, it had lots of goals, but it was also to overcome that decision and just make it very, very clear. All these slaves were American citizens. All right. So there's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. These people are Americans. Many years later, there was a case involving a Chinese guy who was working on the railroads back then. You know, a lot of Chinese people came here and built railroads. And this is long before they built all the crap we buy on Amazon.com, long before that. I don't even think there was an Amazon back then. I don't know. And if Jeff Bezos was alive back then, I don't think the woman he dated back then would have as much plastic surgery as the one he's dating now, because I don't think they had plastic surgery back then. I'm not a historian, but like in the 1890s, I don't think Botox was a thing yet. I don't even think Botox, as far as it being a bioweapon, was a thing. I don't think they invented botulism toxin for another couple years. You know what I mean? Long before it had uses of making people's wrinkles go away, they did use it for things like ethnic cleansing. But I digress. Point is that this guy's working on the railroad, and then he sues and says he's an American citizen. And what the Supreme Court ruled in that case was that his parents had a legal claim to the United States of America. Therefore, he had a legal claim to the United States of America. Therefore, the 14th Amendment applied to him. But in the Supreme Court's analysis of that, they clearly looked at the fact of the parents having a legal claim to America. to being citizens of the United States of America or having legal justification to be in the United States when this guy was born. Okay? That is very different from the idea that I'm a Chinese guy or a Russian and I get my wife and I say, let's go on a baby vacation. And I don't mean a baby moon. Baby moons are fun, by the way. A baby moon is right before the baby's born. You go on a little extended vacation, just you and the missus, and you get away for a little bit before the kid comes and your life is turned upside down. And you never have sleep or sex again. I mean, the S word, you know. That's what a baby moon's all about. So like in the case of Patrick, Bridget and I had a baby moon, went down to Cape Charles, Virginia, had a very long weekend down there. It was wonderful. Patrick was born. We did a baby moon for all three of our kids. But with Reagan, it was like a much shorter baby moon. But it's great. It's a wonderful thing. I highly recommend it if you've got a kid on the way or thinking about having a kid. That's different from a baby vacation where these people will come to the United States of America. They'll pay big bucks for this. They get the hotel room. They get the restaurant reservations. Some of the good ones, too. The ones that we can't get. And then they have a baby here. So that baby can be a U.S. citizen. And then they go back to Russia or China or whatever, and now the baby's a U.S. citizen. And this is an industry, a very, very profitable industry. The problem, though, is that those parents don't have a claim to the United States of America. So they schedule these trips for when the baby's due. And then the baby comes in and is born, you know, at the hotel in California. And now the baby's an American, and then they go back, and the baby's able to get a passport, and then all the bennies are being an American citizen. Nobody in their right mind thinks the founders ever would have thought, or I should say the framers of the 14th Amendment would have ever thought that was okay. Because nobody would have done that back then. How the hell would anybody have even thought, and why would they have thought about doing that, coming to the United States by boat back then, for the purposes of having a baby here, so that they go back and have dual citizenship back in France or Italy or where, who, like back then, who would have ever thought of that? Nobody. There was no need for that at the time. So, and also too, there was no fancy service organizing that for you. It just was not a thing. It's a thing now. So it's not even a question. There's nothing cruel about it. Most countries around the world, the most civilized countries, and even ones that are not particularly civilized, understand this. So that if Bridget and I were on vacation in Europe and were pregnant and had a baby, that baby would not be a citizen of that country. They'd be like, congratulations, have fun, but that baby's not a citizen. Now, there's exceptions to that, obviously. If your child's born in a military base, if the child is born in... I mean, there's different exceptions for when an American citizen is born overseas and is still maintains American citizenship. And on the case of a vacation, if a baby's born but the parents are American citizens, usually it's worked out where the baby is still an American citizen, even though he wasn't born on U.S. soil. And these things get complicated, and we don't need to get into all of that. But the point is this. The 14th Amendment was never intended so that a Chinese couple could spend 2 to 3 weeks in America on vacation so that kid can be born an American citizen. Never. This is not even up for debate. But of course it'll be debated. And ultimately go to the Supreme Court. And what the Supreme Court of the United States of America has to do is just look at what the intent of the 14th Amendment was at the time the 14th Amendment was ratified. It's not hard. Like everything else, there's minutes. There's a record from the debate on the 14th Amendment in the Congress, in various state legislatures. There's various news articles that were written back then. It's not that hard. Just got to do a little bit of homework. And if you can find me anything that says, we are doing this so that somebody can come into the United States of America, have a kid on U.S. soil, for the purposes of that kid being a citizen, then I will say I was wrong. But you're not going to find that in the historical record, period. You'll find the opposite. In the historical record, it will clearly show that those advocating for the ratification of the 14th Amendment were purposely making it very clear this would not apply to foreigners. It would not apply to them. Period. That's in the historical record. So if the Supreme Court of the United States does its job, it will end birthright citizenship. This notion of birthright citizenship. I don't even think that's the right term, because in order to have birthright citizenship, that implies that your parents have a legal basis in the United States. The mom, because the baby comes out of the mother, has a legal basis, a legal claim to the United States of America for the purposes of citizenship. And then the baby then would also have it. That's very, very plain and simple and very clear. Clear for everybody to understand. This judge in Washington is a classic lefty. I believe the Constitution should be interpreted for the year 2025. Well, that's not how we do things. We look at it from the basis of time in which the amendment was passed. Not through the lens of today, but through the lens of when it was actually ratified, which was 18-something or other. We look at it through that lens and we say, what was the intent? Luckily, we have some people on the Supreme Court that believe that that is the job of the Supreme Court, just to look at it through the lens of the time in which either that law or that amendment was passed or ratified, the original intent, textualism, understanding all of those things. Yes, a comma matters. It really does. Clauses matter. The late, great Justice Antonin Scalia, in his decision on the Second Amendment, which is one of the, I think, greatest court decisions, was very clear about breaking down the context of the Second Amendment and how it's written and how the clauses were written back in the 1700s versus how we use grammar today. In fact, if you were to put that into the Grammarly machine, it would find it all kinds of wrong, but not if you did it in 1787. It would have found it to be just fine, and that the clauses would clearly show that this was not just something that was subject to, or just, I should say, just provided for a militia. It was the people who represented the militia, and that's why we're all able to possess firearms. It was a very, very important decision in that case, obviously. So, long story short is this. Thank God we've got Gorsuch on there, we've got Alito on there, and we've got Kavanaugh on there, and I hope to God Amy Coney Barrett will see the light, and thank God we have Justice Clarence Thomas on there, and Roberts, who the hell knows with that guy. And with Amy Coney Barrett, I'd love to say for sure that she'd be a yes vote on this. She should be, but she disappointed me. She's disappointed me a number of times. We know where the three lefty judges will go. But this really should be a 6-3 decision in favor of saying that, yes, the 14th Amendment does not guarantee citizenship to those born on U.S. soil unless they have a legal basis for being in the United States of America that would justify citizenship. In other words, the mom's a citizen, the dad's a citizen, or some other circumstance that would enable that. But just simply being here because you're on vacation at Disney World is not enough. That's not enough. Being born on U.S. soil in and of itself is not enough. If it was, then all of those people who were children of diplomats and ambassadors would all be American citizens, and they weren't. So you just go back in time, you look at the record, and then you could form the basis of what the intent of the 14th Amendment was. So. And if you don't like that, then ratify the Constitution. Ratify the Constitution to say that anyone born on U.S. soil is hereby a U.S. citizen. But I'm telling you, if you do that, that would be a huge mistake, because that would be unlike most of the civilized world, who doesn't do it that way. And there's a reason why they don't do it that way. Because we don't want people just simply coming to the United States of America for the purposes of having a child who will then have U.S. citizenship, and then going back to that country and having no allegiance to this country. There's an important principle about that, and that is allegiance to the United States of America, which again is something that the founders and the framers were acutely aware of, which is why even for the presidency, you have to be here for a certain period of time before you can run for president, even if you are, in fact, meet the requirement of being a United States citizen, born as a U.S. citizen. Allegiance to America matters, because we don't want U.S. citizens growing up in China or another country and then coming here and saying, well, I'm a U.S. citizen. I get to vote, and I'm going to vote in the interests of my real country and abuse my citizenship for the purposes of voting to hurt this country that I happen to have been born on soil of. But I have no stake, no claim, no love for, quite frankly. So there is a reason why, in a national security love of country perspective, that bet's there. And it's obviously there for that reason, too, because we don't want people choosing to have children in the United States of America so that they could one day utilize those children to work against the interests of the United States of America. Citizenship matters. Citizenship is supposed to be special. And the idea is that we all protect our citizenship. We protect the country that we love, that we're citizens of. People earn their citizenship, and they can earn their citizenship. And when they do and they have children, those children will be citizens. But simply crossing the border illegally and having a child does not make that child eligible for U.S. citizenship, because those parents did not have a legal basis for being in the United States of America that would afford that child citizenship. This is really not that complex if you look at it through the lens of the 1860s and not through the lens of the year 2025 or the 1880s, whenever it was. I'm not good with dates. Whatever it was.
The Rich Zeoli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.